morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Kuf Chaf Zion. We're in Kuf Chaf Vav Amid Beis. We're starting today at the Mishnah. Mishnah's going to teach us three halachas. You start with number one. Ha'omer ish ploni b'ni b'chor. Lo yitol pishnayim. So a person says, look, that's my firstborn son, and I wish that he does not receive a pishnayim. That's my instruction. Or, for example, ish ploni b'ni lo yirashi mechav. Or, you see, that's my son, and I don't want him to get a yirusha together with the other sons. Lo amar klum. So such statements have no halachic validity, and it's as if he said nothing. What he's trying to do is uproot the halachas of the Torah. The halachas of the Torah give a very clear directive in terms of how Yerusha is to be divided amongst the sons. The older son is going to get a double portion, all the other sons are going to get equitable portions of the estate, and you can't rewrite and you cannot reassign who's going to be getting what through Yerusha. Now, as we're going to be discussing extensively through the remainder of our perek, of course, what you can do is that you can gift away your assets before you die. That's obvious. So you can do whatever you want with your money before you die. So if you want to allocate your money before death, and you want to say that this person's going to get this, and this kid's going to get that, so you have every right to do so. But what you're trying to do over here is redefine Yerusha. You can't redefine Yerusha. The Torah gives a very straightforward definition of what Yerusha is. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us is that you can't rewrite the rules of the Torah. Shehis amashikasa b'Torah, the Mishnah says it straight out, because you are trying to make conditions on that which the Torah has written, and it doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. Now, this is monetary issue. This is monetary law. And if you have somewhere in your head that I thought maybe by monetary law you're allowed to rewrite the terms of the Torah, so you're not alone. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to point out there are Tanaim who are of the opinion that when it comes to monetary law, the Torah is giving us basic guidelines, rules, but in other words, if it's a monetary exchange between people, so you are allowed to rewrite the rules of the Torah. So there is an opinion out there, and the Gemara later on, not much later, in just a couple minutes from now, is going to be asking the question, well, what is our mission going to do with that opinion? So we'll stay tuned. That's where that's coming up. Let's say money's being divided based on the instructions of the father. He was a shriv merah. He gave final instructions in terms of how the money is to be allocated. So, and riba le'echad umiyet le'echad v'hish lehem es bechor. Dvarv kayamim. So, let's say he wants to give a lot to one of his kids and a little bit to another one of his kids. And as far as the bechor is concerned, don't give him anything. Don't give him anything extra. Don't give him the double portion. Give him what everyone else is getting. So, dvarv kayamim. So, at that point in time, you're going to listen to him. Because, again, this is not a Yerusha. This is simple allocation of his estate. He wants to divide the estate, and he wants certain sons to get certain amounts, and he has every right to do so. Not as a Yerusha, but just simply as allocation of his estate. So a distribution of his estate. However, once he says the word Yerusha, that's it. It ruins it. Meaning, the word Yerusha now he's trying to dictate what the terms of the Torah are, and you can't. So as a tzava, as a last instruction, the person has to be very careful not to use the word Yerusha. Now, if he writes the word matana, whether it was in the beginning or the middle and the end, so then it's good. Meaning that'll make everything good. What exactly is the case of this, the last case here in the Mishnah? So stay tuned. The Gemara later on is going to be discussing what exactly is being discussed in this last part of the Mishnah. Okay.
Who's responsible for maintaining the wife and the daughters?
The ksuva takes care of everyone. The ksuva that he writes for his wife is going to take care of the wife. It's going to take care of the daughters.
Since the poor doesn't get the double.
The daughter's not getting anything. In other words, from the Yerusha.
The poor will not get the double now.
Right.
Is he still obligated to...
It's the estate. In other words, it's not the Bechor's responsibility. It's the estate's responsibility. So, okay. The ksuva takes care of the women. Okay. So far, what do we have in our Mishnah? We have three basic halachas. The first halacha talked about him trying to rewrite the rules of Yerusha. The Mishnah says he can't do that. The second case of the Mishnah is talking about where he's not trying to rewrite the case of the laws of Yerusha. He's just simply making a distribution of his assets prior to his death. He can absolutely do that. That's perfectly legitimate. And then the third point of the Mishnah had to do with the wording that he uses. He's got to be careful to use the words Matana, not the words Yerusha. And then that last point of the Mishnah is that if he throws Matana anywhere in there, that's okay. And again, we're going to wait till the Gemara to discuss exactly what that last case of the Mishnah is discussing. We start with the Gemara. We're on Kuf Chav Amud Beis, right in the middle of the Amud. We're starting with the Gemara. Lema Masisin Delo Rav Yehuda. Now it seems very clear that our Mishnah is not following like the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Da'i Rav Yehuda Hamar B'Davar Shel Mamon Tanah Kayam. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that when it comes to monetary law, a person can make exclusions from that which the Torah states. I mean, the Torah says X, and we want to say not X, but rather Y. So you want to change the dollar amount, the percentage amount. When it comes to monetary law, you have every right to do so, as long as you have two willing participants. Now, I really just gave away the Gemara's answer. Meaning the question of the Gemara is, our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda, right? Detanya, first let's see the Bryce inside. A man says to a woman, look, I want to marry you, but the financial responsibility, meaning it's onerous. It's too much. What do you want me to do? I'm going to take care of you and feed you and clothe you and give you a roof over your head? Like, come on. That's crazy talk. So, as long as you don't have the obligations of Sherek Susvona. Now, it's a worthwhile discussion. I'm just not going to have it right now. In terms of what Ona fits into a monetary law or fits into to Isavahetah law. Ona is the husband's responsibility to be intimate with his wife. So where exactly does that fit in this discussion? Unclear. But what is clear, however, Shirk Sus, right, the food, the clothing, the roof over her head, those are financial obligations. That's very clear. And the man says to the woman, look, I want to be Mekadesh you, and I know that the Torah requires me to take care of these financial responsibilities, but look, I'd like to marry you without these financial responsibilities. You good with that? And she says, yeah, sure. I like that. Sounds like a great idea. Now, just, you know, from practical, you know, life advice, I'm not sure how long this marriage is going to last, but that's neither here nor there. That's not, we are discussing right now the halachic ramifications of such a statement. And the Gemara says, the Brisa says, ha'rezem ha'kudeshes, the condition's good. Vitanao bato div Rav Meir. Now, according to Rav Meir, the marriage is going to be good, and all the preconditions that were set into the marriage are just simply ignored. Because according to Rav Meir, what are you trying to do? You're trying to rewrite the rules of the Torah? You can't rewrite the rules of the Torah. Torah says that a husband is financially obligated to his wife to support her and to provide for her clothing and a roof overhead, and you can't renegotiate the terms of marriage. The marriage is good, the Tanai falls away. And Rav Yehuda Amar B'Davar Shel Mamon Tanai Kayem, and Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that no, that when it comes to monetary law, it works. Meaning both the marriage is good and the Tanai is going to be binding, which means now that they're going to have a marriage with where the husband does not have any financial responsibility, she agreed to those terms. So what do we just see together? A machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, where, according to Rav Meir, you can't rewrite the rules of the Torah, even when it comes to monetary law. According to Rav Yehuda, you're allowed to rewrite the laws of the Torah when it comes to monetary law. So now when you go back to our Mishnah says that the father is saying, you know, I don't want my Bechor to get Pishnaim. So the Mishnah says he's ignored. Why? Meaning, we have a machlokes in Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. Now, I know some mishnas ka Rav Meir. So, in other words, the Gemara doesn't say this, but let's say this outside. Stam Mishnah ka Rav Meir, generally speaking, anonymous mishnayos are authored by Rav Meir. That's true. On the other hand, we also know that if you have a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, we generally file like Rav Yehuda over that of Rav Meir. So, I guess fitting into the Gemara's discussion over here is, it's a little bit strange now that our Mishnah is presenting something which is, at least according to Rav Yehuda, not the halacha. So, what are you going to say about our Mishnah? The Gemara says, and I gave away the answer already, but listen, now we get to see it inside. Afilu tim Rav Yehuda. You could say that our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda. How so? Hasim yadav kamachla. Hacha lo kamachel. Exactly. In order for there to be a rewriting of the laws of the Torah when it comes to monetary law, you need two willing participants, where both people who were involved in this monetary exchange are in total agreement that, look, the Torah awards somebody this much money for whatever. In other words, whatever monetary law we could be talking about, pikadon, schar schir, whatever, the whole world of mamonos. So if you have two willing participants who say basically, yes, Torah dictates that these are the terms, but well, you know what? We're in agreement. You and I are in agreement that we're going to ignore what the Torah is saying, and we're going to either more or less money, whatever the case is. However, And that's true in the case of marriage as well, meaning you have two willing participants. You have a husband and a wife who are agreeing to get married under the terms of no financial responsibility. Fine, they're both in agreement. And she's mocha. But over here, what do you have? You have the father saying the bechor is not going to get the bishnayim. Did we ask the bechor? Are you okay with that? You like that you're not getting bishnayim? Now, if he's okay with it, so maybe we have a discussion, but we're assuming that our Mishnah is not weighing in on whether or not the children are okay with it or not. Meaning it's the father just simply dictating the terms, and under those terms, you can't rewrite the laws of the Torah on monetary issues, even according to Rav Yehuda. I'm Rav Yosef, back to the Gemara. Continuing. I'm Ish Ploni B'ni Bechori Hu Notel Pishnayim. Ish Ploni Bechor Hu Eino Notel Pishnayim. So the Gemara quotes a halacha, a couple of halachas in the name of Yosef. And that is, when a person identifies that my son is my son, that young man over there is my son, and he's my oldest, so now he takes Pishnayim, he takes the double portion. Meaning, and we're going to be talking about this later today, it comes up on Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, it's a machlokes Tanayim, but let's assume right now that the husband has credibility to identify which one is his oldest. Now, generally speaking, in terms of positive identification, so that person gets money, so you need edus, you need testimony. Now, testimony comes in the form of two witnesses, and on top of that, they also have to be not related. In other words, two objective witnesses. What we're going to learn together over the course of today's daf, and we're seeing it now for the first time, is that there's a special halacha in terms of identifying your own children. And a father has the credibility to identify who his son is, and furthermore, he has the Torah-given right and credibility to identify who his oldest son is. Now, that's going to have obvious ramifications, meaning that now that he identified who his oldest son is, so then that young man is going to be receiving pishtaim, he's going to be receiving a double portion of the estate. The father is given credibility. Now, that's if he says the words that this is my b'ni b'chori, my oldest. However, but if he doesn't say the word bechori, but he just simply says ish ploni bechoru, you see that young man over there? That's the oldest, not my oldest, but the oldest. And no notel pishnayim, under those circumstances, that son does not get pishnayim. Why? Because dilma bechor di ima kamar. Because by saying the oldest doesn't necessarily mean my oldest. It just simply means that he's a bechor, but not my bechor. Could very well be that this is his second marriage, his third marriage, and that through his mother, he's the oldest. And as we know, in other words, when you're the oldest of the mother, so in many areas of halacha, you are considered a bechor. You are a bechor in terms of pidyon haben. You require a redemption. So it sounds like I have other examples of what you're bechor for. I don't. But anyway, but that's good enough. Meaning you're a bechor for pidyon haben. So, but if you do not say the words bechori, so then that does not mean necessarily that he's your bechor, and therefore he does not get the pishnayim. Okay. We're going to be discussing later on, meaning there's more to contextualize in this discussion. Do people assume he is a bechor? Do people assume he's not a bechor? Meaning what has been the assumption going up until this point in time before dad made this pronouncement of either he's my bechor or he's a bechor? So later on we'll contextualize this discussion a lot better so that we understand when the father needs to weigh in and say, oh, that's my oldest. The Gemara has a story. How would also come at the Rabbah of Avrechanu Amarle Muchzakani Bezeshu Bechor? So a person comes in front of Rabbi Barbachan and says, look, I know that this young man over here is the Bechor. And let's just assume right now that this was not popular knowledge, it was not common knowledge, that this young man was a Bechor. And so a person, he needed people to testify on his behalf, and he got a guy to come forward. Now again, one guy is not enough, he needs two, but he got one guy to come forward and say, I know he's a Bechor. So we have, and I know you need two witnesses for this, but just for our purposes right now, let's assume that we have so far one witness saying that this one's a Bechor. Amalei Minayadas. And so the question was, well, how do you know? Well, where did you get this idea that he's the Bechor? Because I always often heard his father say, pointing to this kid, oh, this kid, this one's the foolish Bechor. He's the foolish oldest. Okay. The Gemara, I don't think right now, is giving us parenting advice, and certainly the name-calling and the labeling does not seem to be... does not seem to be sound parenting advice, but in other words, but the Gemara's point over here is just simply that I heard Dad identify him being the oldest. Therefore, from a halachic standpoint, now he's the oldest entitled to the Pishnayim. I think of this, and I'm sure others will think of it as well. It's not the first time that you've heard the expression "foolish Bechor." Actually, the expression is Bechor Shota in relation to Reuven. Right? Remember when Yaakov ran out of food for the first time after getting a supply from Mitzrayim, and so now he had to go back another time. But the brothers, his kids, said to him, you know, we can only go down, but only if we bring Binyamin with us, because we told the minister over there in Egypt, we don't know who he is, but we know. So we told the minister in Egypt that the second in command, the viceroy. So we told them that we have another brother, but we didn't want to bring him. And so he said, the next time you come, you're only coming with your brother. And so Yaakov said, yeah, but I'm not going to send Binyamin. That's not negotiable. So Reuven then went over to his father and said, well, let's do the following. You know, I have two sons, and in the event that, well, I'll take Binyamin and we'll bring him back. And if we don't bring Binyamin back, then you can kill my two sons. That's what Reuven says to his father. And Rashi over there, the pasuk doesn't say it, but Rashi over there says that Yaakov says to Reuven, "Bechor Shoteh," meaning you are right. What a foolish suggestion! How is that going to help me? How is that going to assuage me? It's not going to make me feel any better. Okay. Anyway, that's the Bechor Sichla, the foolish oldest. Anyway, so this guy's testifying that I heard Dad say this about this kid. Therefore, he's the oldest. So Dilma Bechor Deimahu Dechol Bechor Deimah Nami Bechor Sichla Kaaru Lei. So once again, just because you heard him say that he was the oldest is not enough. It's insufficient. In other words, in order for the father to positively identify his son as being his oldest, he must specifically say, "Bini Bechori." It is my oldest. Just because, again, just being the oldest does not necessarily mean you're the oldest of the father. It could just simply be you're the oldest of the mother. So that's it's not enough identification from the part of the father. Next story. So again, a person goes over to Rabbi Chanina and says, I can tell you that this kid is a Bechor. How do I know that? Because Amalei Mena Yadad. And he said, how do I know that? How do you know that? Amalei Dechi Havalei Asal Agabe Avua Amalehu. Because when there was an incident once where a guy comes over to his father, and the father says, Zilul Agabe Shichachas Beri, go to my son Shichachas. Now, just an open admission, that is a strange name for a young man, right? Shechachas translates as forgetful. Okay, I think we can all agree that just it sounds like a strange name. But anyway, so Shechachas breed the Bukhrahu. So go to my son Shechachas, he is my oldest. So, let me read it better. He did not say my oldest. The Bukhrahu, he says he's the oldest. Umasiruka, and it happens to be that if you take a spit and you put it on your eye, so it will have therapeutic ability on your eye. Okay, you walk in at a perfect time. So you take the spit and you put it on the eye, so it would be excellent therapy for the eye. So the Gemara says v'dama debuchar de'imahu. So again, so over here he didn't say the magic words bichori. It's my oldest. He just simply said bukhrahu. He says he's the oldest. And that by itself is not enough positive identification to say whether or not he's the mother's oldest or the father's oldest. So the Gemara has a tradition, Gemiri. This is a tradition of the Gemara. This is going to be one of the stranger ones we're going to hear over the course of Shas. Bukhra de Abba Masiruka. Bukhra de Ima Masiruke. Okay, it's a stranger tradition that we're going to hear. And that is that the spit of the father's oldest is going to be therapeutic for eyesight. The spit of the mother's oldest is not going to be therapeutic for eyesight. Okay, I don't have any rational, reasonable explanation for why that is. Okay, but for our purposes now, it doesn't matter. Once we have such a tradition, so that falls under the category of chazaka, and therefore, when he says that regarding his son, he's identifying that son as his oldest, and therefore he is positively identified as his oldest. Okay, so what do we have right now in the Gemara? We have now, so far, a Mishnah talking about rewriting the laws of the Torah. You cannot, says the Mishnah, even though it's monetary law. What about the opinion of Rabbi Huda, who says that you are allowed to rewrite the laws of the Torah when it comes to monetary law? Says the Gemara, that's only when there are two willing participants. However, if the father is just simply dictating the terms, and one son's going to gain, the other son's going to lose, and they were not agreeing to this redistribution, so then we don't say that you can just simply rewrite the laws of the Torah. As we learned back in the Mishnah, if the father wants to distribute his estate prior to his death, he has every right to do so. And even though that distribution does not follow an equitable distribution, father has every right to do so before he dies. It's just that as Yerusha, there are very clear terms of the Torah regarding what Yerusha is, and that he cannot rewrite. And then what we've been learning since the Gemara is this idea that a father can positively identify his son as being the Bechor. He has to say the words Bechori, my oldest. Just to say the oldest is insufficient, because it could just simply be that he's mom's oldest but not dad's oldest. So he has to say the word Bechori. Okay. The Gemara is coming up right now, and we'll cover basically half of our daf today. Going to be a little bit strange. We are on to the discussion of Tumtum and Androgynous. So the really going to be focusing more on Tumtum. So there are two types of conditions in the Torah where gender identity is unclear. Okay, you think it's such a new phenomenon. Okay, the gender identity is unclear. So the one which we're not discussing over the course of today's daf is androgynous. Androgynous, it's actually a Greek word. It's a composite of two words, andro meaning man, and gyn, gynecologist, is a woman. And what is happening is that the child that comes out is actually expressing physically two different genders, both male and female. He has both male and female genitalia. So that's the androgynous. That's one gender confusion. The other gender confusion is the tumtum. A tumtum is where the child comes out, where there is some sort of flap that is over the genitalia, and therefore it's just simply unknown whether or not it is male or female. Now, what may end up happening at a later point in time is that that membrane may break, and so therefore exposing the genitalia, and so therefore at a later point in time, it will be known whether or not that the child is male or female, but at the time of birth, it's covered, and that is what in halacha is referred to as a tumtum. Generally speaking, this creates a lot of problems in halacha, especially halachas that require us to know what the gender is. So what do we do regarding these various conditions of tumtum and androgynous regarding halacha? So often is the time the Gemara discusses this, and today is just a good example where it's going to be discussed in depth, in detail, exactly what's going to happen. Our day today is going to be focused only on the tumtum, not on the androgynous. Amar Rebbe Ami. We are on the very bottom of Kuch Chavav Amud Beis, and we start off with a series of halachas that deal with the tumtum. Amar Rabbi Amar Tumtum Shenikra V'Nimsa Zachar. So you have the tumtum that's born. So again, the membrane is over the genitalia, so you don't know what the baby is, whether male or female. And after the child is born, so then the membrane breaks, and then we see that Nimsa Zachar, that it really was a male. So Eino No Tel Pishnayim. So if this was the firstborn, so as a Gzeiras HaKosev, as a halacha, I don't have a rational explanation. I don't need one. Meaning it's just simply the Gzeiras HaKosev. This is just simply the terms that the Torah dictates. Because he was born with his identity, gender identity, not clear at the time of birth, therefore he does not get Pishnayim. He does not get the double portion. Now, of course, he's going to receive, as part of the Yerusha, a portion like everyone else is going to be receiving, but he's not going to receive the Pishnayim. Why? So the Gemara quotes a drasha. So the Amakra, the Torah says, Vaya ben abachor lasnia, Ashiye ben mishas havaya. The Torah says, Vihaya. Vihaya means the state of being, meaning that the moment that he came into existence, he must be identified as a male. If his identity of a male comes at a later point in time, like for example of what we're discussing, the tumtum, so then he does not qualify for the pishnaim of the bechor. And now, as long as we have the discussion of what exemptions the tumtum has, so the Gemara gives other exemptions as well. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says that he's not going to be judged as a ben sora mora. We know 8th parak of Sanhedrin. The Gemara there, it's actually first before it's the 8th parak of Sanhedrin. First, it's a parsha in the Torah. The beginning of parsha is Kiseitze. So we know that if under certain circumstances, very very limited circumstances, in fact, the Gemara has an opinion in Sanhedrin. Lo hayav lo yeyeh, never happened, never will happen, but So it may be only theoretical, but you have a circumstance, a limited circumstance, where you have a son that's so rebellious that he's chayv misa. You give him the death penalty. So the ben zorah mor. So the and now, okay, from the Torah, now we can go to the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, which we're going to get to shortly enough in Daf Yomi. So the eighth parak of Sanhedrin has a discussion, not that long, it's a 4 or 5 blot of Gemara over there that talks about the details regarding the halacha. So here, tucked away in the eighth parak of Baba Basra, we have another detail regarding the halachas of ben zorah mor, which is that if the son comes out of his mother's womb and he was a tumtum, so his gender was not identified at the time of birth, only later discovered that he was a boy, so he's not subject to the laws of ben zorah mor, meaning even if he checks all the boxes for ben zorah mor, but he's not going to be put to death. Again, gzeres akasav da amakra ki yeli ish ben zorah mor ashiya ben mishas havaya. And again, the drasha is based on the same principle that the word havaya means existence. The moment he comes into existence, he must be identified as a male. If not, he's not subject to the punishment of ben zorah mor. Next, kuf chavzayin amad alf, top of the amad, amemar amar afin amamayit chelik bechora shenemar. Now, another halacha regarding the Tumtum is that he's not going to take away from the Bechor, from the Bechorah. Shenem, the Pasuk says, V'yadul Obanim, Ashi Ben Bishas Leida, he has to be a son at the time of birth. So let's illustrate exactly what this means. Meaning a Maimar is now giving us another halacha when it comes to the Tumtum, and that is, this is different than the first halacha. The first halacha we learn is that if he is the Bechorah, but he comes out with his gender not being identified, only at a later point in time was his gender identified, so he's not going to get the Pishnayim. This is a different halacha. And that is that, let's say he comes out now not as the Bechor, but let's say he comes out number 2 or number 3, whatever. In other words, any point after the Bechor. So he's not taking away from the Bechor. Okay. So mathematically, what does that mean? So let's illustrate the following example. I'm going to use the Rashbam as my example, meaning he's going to spell it out. I'm reading it inside. It's the first Rashbam on Kuf Chav Zayin Amar Aleph. Amei Ma'amar Afin Amamai Chelik Bechora. Also Tumtum Shenikra V'Nimsa Zachar. Imu Pasha V'Ena Bechor. V'Chol Nichle Av Tishamanim. So let's say, for example, that you have the Tumtum coming out. He wasn't the oldest. Meaning the oldest came out as a male from the point of birth. Fine. He's a Bechor. And then either in the number 2 or number 3 slot, out comes the Tumtum. So, okay, and let's illustrate a scenario in which it's a Bechor, followed then by a Pasha, simple, straightforward son afterwards, and then a Tumtum in the 3rd slot. And really, it does, for our purpose of our illustration, it doesn't matter whether the Tumtum was number 2 or number 3. But, okay. Anyway, and V'chol Nichsei Av Tishamanim. Now, as far as Dad's estate was concerned, so when Dad died, he died with 9 mana. Mana is just simply a unit. V'hein Shlosha Banim, B'chor Pasha V'Tumtum. 3 sons, the oldest, the Pasha, the regular son, and a Tumtum, who obviously at a later point in time identified his gender as a male. Cholken HaNechasim T'chila L'Shlosha Chalakim. Ki'ilu Ein Kan Ki'im B'chor Pasha. So now in terms of the division, here's what we're going to do. We're going to temporarily, at least for this step of the process, we're going to ignore the Tumtum. Even though, again, we're using the word Tumtum, even though now we know he's a male. But we're going to ignore him. And so therefore, we're dividing the estate as if there's only a Bechor and a Pasha. So, we know how this works, Bechor and a Pasha. The Bechor gets 2x. Pasha's going to get x. Well, there's 9. So that means now they're going to take 3x. 3x equals 9. So x is equal to 3. So there are 3 portions of 3. And now, what is the Bechor going to get? Ki and Bechor Pasha. V'atumtum keman delesa. And right now, the Tumtum is to be ignored. Now what we're going to do is we're going to give the Bechor his portion and his second portion as well. So that's 3 plus 3, that's going to be 6. Lefi shabechor nota pishnayim bepashen. Nimsa chelek bechor shlosh amanim. Choz v'chokim ashish amanim hanosarim. You give the Bechor just his double portion of being 3. Sorry, I said you give him 6. So you give him 3, leaving now 6 as a remainder. Now what you do with the 6 of the remainder now we bring in the Tumtum, and now we say, okay, now we'll do an equitable distribution with you here. And what that now means is that with the 6 remaining, so it's going to be equal to divided 2, 2, and 2. So now, Shishamanim Nosarim, Bein Shloshim, Nimsa Bechor Noto Chamisha. manim. So in terms of now how this is going to end up sum total, is that the Bechor is now going to be receiving 5, 3 plus 2 is 5. And the Tumtum and the Pashut are going to be receiving 2 each. Okay.
The Bechor is getting more than double.
Right, you're correct. In other words, in this illustration, using the right, using the formula of ignoring the tumtum for the purposes of just his bechor, for his bechor portion.
So the pashut son is losing also.
Correct. Agreed. Again, it's just it's exeris akasav. This I don't have a rational way of explaining it. It's not right. This is not a punishment. This is just simply the way the Torah distributes under these circumstances. That's all. And you're right. Meaning the conclusion is correct. Meaning that the Pashut also is going to lose that as a result of that. Okay. Okay, so that is the third halacha regarding the tumtum that we learned this morning. Okay, the Gemara keeps going. Rav Shizbi Amar Af Enonim Alashmona. Rav Shizbi says that he's not going to get a bris milah on the eighth day. Again, so in other words, the scenario would be where he comes out with a membrane over his genitalia. So at the time of birth, we don't know whether he was a male or female. And then, sometime between birth and the eighth day, so the membrane breaks, and we now discover that he was a boy, that he is a boy. So under those circumstances, the milah does not occur on the eighth day. Why? Amakra, Isha Kisazriya, Vialda Zachar, Uvi Yamash Miyamol, Achie Zachar Mishas Leda. Once again, the Torah dictates that in order for the bris to take place on the eighth day, it has to be that the identity, the male identity, has to be realized at the time of birth. If it's not realized at the time of birth, but only subsequent to that point in time, so then the milah does not come on the eighth day. Now, for the milah not to be on the eighth day, by the way, just if I can remind all of us, this is not the first time we've heard this in the Gemara, where milah does not occur on day eight. For example, cesarean section, right? If the baby does not come out through a natural vaginal delivery, but it comes out cesarean section, so there is an opinion in the Gemara that the bris milah does not occur on day eight. According to one opinion in the Gemara, you could do the bris milah immediately. I understand that medically it's not safe, but obviously you have to take that into consideration, but halachically you could do the bris on, you don't have to wait till day eight. So the idea that, you know, there is a bris not done on day eight is not unusual, it's not totally unusual. So here's another example where the gender identity was only discovered at a later point in time. Okay, another halacha as it relates to the tumtum. I'm sure none of us thought there'd be so many halachas, but another halacha as it relates to the tumtum. Rav Shravya Amar Af Ein Imo Tamei Aleda. The mother does not Tamei Aleda. Damakra Isha Kisazria V'Yalda Zachar V'Tama Shivas Yamin Ad Shei Zachar Mishas Leda. Okay, now this necessitates a little bit of background, so let's just go over the basics, the very basics, and in order to appreciate and understand this next halacha that we just learned regarding the tumtum. When a woman gives birth, so she is tame, she's tame, or to say it better, she's tamea. She is going to be in a state of impurity. And that's going to be true with or without blood. Now, there is no such thing as a birth without blood, but at least, even in theory, even if it came out that just the baby with no blood, so the mother is tamea. She's going to be tamea for what schedule? Well, the Torah is very clear, actually, in terms of what the schedule of her tumah is going to be. If she gave birth to a boy, so she's going to be tamea for 7 days, and then after that, she'll tovel in the mikvah, and then for the next 33 days, even if she bleeds for the next 33 days, she's going to be tahara. And that's what's called in the Torah and in the Gemara, that's called dam tahor. That's blood that comes out of a woman where it's dam tahor. And the husband can be with his wife. Now, already since the time of the Gaonim, going back more than a millennia ago, since the time of the Gaonim, we don't take advantage of this halacha of dam tahor. Any blood that comes out of the woman is registered as dam tameh or dam tameyam. So, okay, but Again, I'm just giving the basic construct of what the halach is according to the Torah, so that we understand and appreciate what we're learning together right now. So if a woman gives birth to a male, 7 days of being tmeah, and then the next 33 days after that, she is tahor. On day 40, that's it. In other words, her yemei tum and taharak have come to an end. On day 41, she'll bring a karban to the Beis HaMikdash, and as a result of that, she can then go into the Beis HaMikdash. That's if she gave birth to a boy. What if she gave birth to a girl? So once again, the Torah is very clear. Beginning of Parshas Tazria, Perek Yud Beis in Vayikra. So once again, the Torah is very clear. If she gave birth to a girl, so everything I said is true, but all the numbers just get doubled. She's Tamea for 14 days, and she'll be Tahora for the subsequent 66 days. Okay. The Gemara, I think it's Anida. The Gemara there says, "What's the? How do you explain the discrepancy?" So first of all, you don't need to. In other words, the Torah says so. So that's it. You don't need to give an explanation. But the Gemara over there gives us one nugget, one little kernel in terms of why the numbers are different for a man than for a woman. The Gemara says is that you want for the bris milah, you want the husband and wife to be together for the bris milah. So that's why then when she has a boy, so she's only tamea for 7 days. Again, the Gemara is just giving a tam hadavar, but in terms of the halacha, the Torah just simply dictates what the halacha is. Anyway, with that stated, so now that we know the basics, so now we come back to our discussion, which is, what if when the baby was born, the baby was gender, it was not identified simply because baby was a tumtum, there was a membrane over the area, and so we didn't know. And then what happens is that a discovery a couple days later, could be even an hour later, meaning it's, you know, it's, in other words, it's not at the time of birth, but then the discovery that the baby was a male. So what do you do in terms of yemei tum and yemei tahara? So the Gemara says, the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Shravya that the mother is not Tamea Leida. Meaning Rav Shravya's opinion is nothing. No Tuma. Meaning because Tuma is only a function of A, giving birth, and B, knowing what the gender is at the time of birth. Once we don't know what the gender was at the time of birth, so there is no Tuma whatsoever. Now again, there's going to be blood, and there she's going to be Tamei as a result of the blood coming out, but at least in theory, just for the baby alone, there's not going to be any Tumah. Okay, that is the opinion of Rav Shravya. So, number of halachas that were said over for the Tumtum, the Gemara only calls into the question of the last one we just learned together. Mitzvah. The Gemara challenges now this last halacha that we just learned together. And that is based on a brisa. Now the brisa says, "Amapelas tumtum ve'androgynous teishev lezachar ulenekeva." A woman rachmana, she had a stillborn, and she miscarried either with tumtum or an androgynous. So here in this particular halacha, so here we're going to introduce the androgynous in our discussion, but it's the same basic idea, meaning out comes something where we don't know what the gender is. Either because the membrane is covered or because the baby is presenting both genders, both male and female. Either way. So the halacha is, says the brisa, this is a brisa. The brisa says that teish lezechol nekeva. So what mom must do now is must observe the days of tumah tahara for both the male and female. Now, just mathematically, our second mathematical computation of the day today. So how's that going to work? So the Rashbam points out, I'm going to say it outside over here. I'll give the fast version of this discussion. So the Rashbam points out over here, here's what you're going to do. You see, we don't know if it's a male or female. So on the Yemei Tumah, so we have to be Machmer, because it could be a female. A male, 7 days of Tumah, female, 14 days of Tumah. We don't know whether it's male or female, or again, if it's an androgynous, it's both. But we don't know, so therefore we're going to err on the side of caution. Therefore, she's going to be Tamea for 14 days. Okay. Now, we know after that comes the period of Yemei Tahora. Now, again, is it a male or female? We don't know. And we're going to err on the side of caution. Now, to say, to give her the full 66 days of Yemei Tahor, might have been a male. She does not, and therefore the mother shouldn't enjoy all 66 days of Yemei Tahor. So therefore what we're going to do is we're going to knock it down to 33. But we're really not knocking it down to 33. We're really knocking it down to 26. Because keep in mind that if it's a male, so it's only 7 days of Tumah followed then by 33 days of Tahor. But what we did, just because we erred on the side of caution regarding Tumah, is we gave her 15 days, mom, 15 days of Yemei Tumah. So therefore that's another 7 days which we have to knock off. So it's really 26 days of Yemei Tahor. Okay, so Hopefully that was clear. Anyway, it comes out to 14 days of Tumah, 26 days of Tahar. Okay. Tiyufta de Rav Shravya Tiyufta. And then the Gemara says, now, as far as Rav Shravya is concerned, okay, so his position is clearly refuted by the Braisa. Because he said that when the baby comes out and the gender of the baby is not identified, so he said, no Tumah. Clearly the Braisa does not agree with that. So, and a Braisa against an Amara, so that's no contest. Braisa beats an Amora. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Rav Shravya, that knocks out the opinion of Rav Shravya. Lame Tavi Tiyufta Rav Shizbi. So the Gemara says, now let's go back. Now Rav Shizbi said that the Bris Milah does not occur on day 8. Wouldn't this Braisa seem to refute the opinion of Rav Shizbi? The Gemara says, no. Tana Sefugi Misafka Leilu Chumra. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. All the Braisa is saying is that we don't know. Meaning, the Braisa is just simply saying that, look, when the baby comes out and its gender is not known and its gender is only identified at a later point in time, so we don't know whether to treat it like a male or like a female. Therefore, all the Braisa is telling us is that we're going to err on the side of caution. But in terms of the Bris Milah's concern, so the Bris Milah is going to take place. We're going to do the Bris Milah. We're just simply not going to do it on day 8. Especially, the Rashman points out, especially if day 8 comes out on Shabbos. We're not going to be Mechal Shabbos for it, but we're not saying that the baby is not a male. We're just simply saying that vis-a-vis the halachas of Tumah Tahara, we're going to err on the side of caution. So the Gemara says, really, is the Braisa is just erring on the side of caution. So the Gemara says, well, if we're erring on the side of caution, meaning, well, shouldn't the Braisa say the following? Zachar Nekeva Nida. Meaning, the Rashbam explains, that when the baby comes out and the gender is not identified immediately, so what are we saying? We don't know. Meaning, we don't know whether it's a male, we don't know whether it's a female, we don't know if maybe there's no Tumas later whatsoever. Meaning, we simply don't know. If all that's true, so then the Gemara says, so, she now, mom, observes 14 days of Yemei Tumah. You should give her any days of Yemei Tahara? If the starting point is, we don't know. We don't know if mom's Tumah later, we don't know if mom's not Tumah later. We're only going to give Yemei Tohar only if we know for sure that it qualifies as a Leda. But if it may not even qualify as a Leda altogether, so don't give her any Yemei Tohar. So the Gemara says, Kasha. The Gemara says, you're right. That point is a good point. And it's difficult. And the Gemara ends off by saying, Kasha. The Rashman points out over here, as we say time and again, Kasha just simply means that it's a sticking point. It's certainly difficult, but it doesn't refute the opinion of Rav Shizbi. Certainly, we refute the opinion of Rav Shravya, but not that of Rav Shizbi. Okay, so let's just quickly recap the halachas that we learned so far, and just go a little bit further in the daf. Okay, so far, we started with the Mishnah today regarding the Bechor, and the father's positive identification of which of his sons is Bechor and which one is not. The father trying to rewrite the laws of Yerusha, which we learned he cannot do. Even according to Rav Yehuda, he can't do it. And then the Gemara launched into a series of halachas that relate to a tumtum. The reason why is because of those halachas, two of them play into our discussion regarding a bechor. If the bechor comes out as a tumtum, he does not get pishnayim. If later discovered to be a male, he'll get a portion like his brothers, but he won't get the pishnayim. The halachas of pishnayim is only awarded to someone who comes out from his mother, identified as a male. And then we also learned another halacha as it relates to a bechor, and that is, if any subsequent son is born as a tumtum, and then later discovered to be a male, so he'll get a Yerusha, but he doesn't cut into the chelek bechor. The chelek bechor is going to be calculated first ignoring him, and then after the bechor gets his chelek bechor, then he gets reintroduced into the hopper for the distribution of the rest of the estate. And then as long as we discuss these halachas as it relates to a tumtum, the Gemara then also brought in a number of halachas also relating to tumtum. Notably, we talked about how a tumtum is not subject to Bensar and Mara, and we talked two other halachas, one regarding the Bris Milah, and the other one is Tumas Leda. Bris Milah does not take place on Yom Shmini if the baby came out of tumtum, and at least according to an Amora's opinion of Rav Shravya, the mother is not Tameya Leda at all. Although this last opinion of Rav Shravya is in fact refuted by the Gemara. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. Ama Rava. Tain Kavasi de Rabbi Ami Ben Velo Tumtum. We have a braisa that supports the opinion of Rabbi Ami That's where we started this morning. Started the series of halachas that if the baby comes out, the firstborn comes out as a tumtum, he does not get a bechor. Ben velo tumtum, bechor velo safek. Now bishlam a ben velo tumtum kedrabi ame. So the Gemara says, so as far as ben velo tumtum, so that's like Rabbi Ami, meaning that in order to receive the pishnayim portion of the Yerusha, the baby has to come out immediately identified as a male, as a son. But as far as this next halacha, what does that mean? So laafuke midi darish rava de darish rava shtei nashim shiyadu beit zecharim b'machma. Gemara has the following scenario. Let's say a man's married to two women, impregnated both women, and the two of them gave birth. Okay, and just a small little bit of confusion. In that we know that each one had a son, each one came out of, the Gemara described it as a cave, but right, each one comes out now with what they think is their son, but we don't know. We don't know which one came out first. Mm-hmm. Now, that's important, meaning because we know that whichever one came out first is the Bechor to the father, and is going to get the Pishnayim. But here now, out comes out two sons, and even if we know which one belongs to which mother, but we don't know which one came out first. So so now, here's a small problem. And that is that later in life, when now it comes to divide the estate, so now all the other brothers that were born subsequent are going to say to these two, well, you don't know which one of the two came out first. So you're not going to, neither of you are going to take Pishnayim. So Kosvin Harsha Zelazeh. So now these two boys came up with a great plan, a great strategy, and that is they wrote each other power of attorney. And so therefore, obviously they have to be, you know, they have to be agreeable to it, but they wrote each other power of attorney, and by doing so, so now each one of them goes to the other series of brothers, the other set of brothers, and say, look, either A, I'm the Bechor, or I was given power of attorney from the other to collect the Pishnayim. Okay, and then they'll take the Pishnayim, and I assume they'll go ahead and they'll divide it. But anyway, so the Gemara says,
so both get Pishnayim?
No, they'll get one Pishnayim, and then they'll divide it. But in other words, each one will have the right to collect because he was given power of attorney by the other brother in the event that he's not the Bechor. So I asked around, and no one told me anything. That if at the time they were born, they knew which one was the oldest, and then afterwards there was a confusion, so then they could write power of attorney one for the other. Lo hukru, ain kosven harsha zelazeh. So, but if at the time of birth, it was in a cave, it was dark, and we don't know which one came out first. So, in other words, we did not have clarity from this of this point from the point of birth. So then they don't have the right to write power of attorney one for another. And again, it comes back to the halacha that in order to get the pishtaim, you must know positively, you meaning, you know, obviously you're an infant at the time, but in other words, but it must be positively identified at the time of birth that you were the firstborn. Otherwise, you're just simply not entitled to the Pishnayim. So Hadauka Rava Amora Allah Vidarish. So when Rava heard this, so Rava said, now I'm going to publicize this halacha. Dvarim shamati lachem talasim biyadi. What I said yesterday was not correct. Baram kach amr mishum Rabbi Yana, but this is a halacha said over the name of Rabbi Yana, which is hukru l'sof nitarv kosan hashah zelazeh. That if first they knew which one was the firstborn, and then there was a mix-up, so then they could write power of attorney, one for the other. But lo hukru ain kosan hashah zelazeh. But if at the time of birth they did not know which one came out first, so then we simply do not have a pishnayim. A pishnayim allowance, and therefore they can write power of attorney one for another. Shachle b'nei akor da'ag m'lishmul yamdin rabbeinu hayu muchzakim b'zeh shu b'chor v'amr aviv al acher b'chor hu mahu. So, let's say the following was sent as a correspondence to Shmuel. Please teach us. We all assumed and suspected that one son was a b'chor. And then, one Seder night, so dad sprung the following news on everybody. Nope, that son's not the Bechor, but rather this one is the Bechor. So, what do we do under those circumstances? Shalchlu, kosher nashah, zelazveh. So Shmuel says under these circumstances, so what they can do is that they can write power of attorney, one for the other. Manavshach. Ikar Rabban Svirlei Lishlachlu Karabban Ikar Rabbi Yehuda Svirlei Lishlachlu Karabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says to Shmuel, I don't understand, is the halacha like the Chachamim or the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda? Now for us right now, the reader of the Gemara right now at this point in time, it's fair for us to be confused. Who are we talking about? Who's the Chacham and who's Rav Yehuda? Like, what's going on over here? So, this is the style of the Gemara. The Gemara right now kind of assumes that we know about this Machlokas, although in just a moment the Gemara is going to introduce us to the Machlokas, but there is a Machlokas between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda. What happens in the event where we all think we know who the Bechor is, and then Dad just, he unloads with what, you know, he's what to all of us is new information, But Dad now re-identifies who the oldest one is. Do we believe Dad, yes or no? Machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. So basically what we turn to Shmuel, we say is, well, who is the halacha follow like? Is it like Rav Yehuda or is it like the Chachamim? So the Gemara says, and we'll end today with this. So the Gemara says, Misafkali k'Rav Yehuda k'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, well, Shmuel is actually unclear in terms of who the halacha follows like. That's why Shmuel gives the advice of having each one of them write power of attorney one to the other. And that will be the solution in terms of how they can collect their pishnayim, because he's unclear about what the halacha. Tomorrow, we'll start off with the machlokas of Rav Yehuda and the chachamim vis-a-vis the father's ability to re-identify, re-establish who the oldest is, even though we all thought we knew who the oldest was.